This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Buehr has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com as well. We are over at Seahawks training camp again today. 5 days this week, Brock, will be out of the studio, all five of them.
Wow.
4 days here at practice, and then Wednesday we'll be over at Safeco Field. Talk to Mariners manager Scott Service that morning. Should be a lot of fun. I'm assuming about 9:30 we'll be chatting with Scott on Wednesday. And
it's like an old country song, man. There's a difference between living and living well. This is living well, right?
It is. It's very nice.
This is living well.
Scott's got a choice ahead of him, man, because Felix Hernandez cannot be in his rotation anymore. I don't know how much more simply this can be stated. Scott Service has an interesting challenge ahead of him because he can no longer keep Felix Hernandez. Hold on. Oh, sorry. He just gave up another hit.
Stop
We're just
it.
Sitting here. Felix gave up, and he's not even pitching right now. He gave up another hit. Whoa. How'd he do that? Man, that's amazing. He's got to be removed from the starting rotation, and I don't know whether he can go to the bullpen. I mean, I guess that's an option.
Yeah.
You're not going to DFA him, obviously, so your choices right now, essentially, are to keep him in the rotation, put him in the bullpen, maybe, or find a way to disable list him again because of, you know, some sort of a bad pitching flu. But I don't know what you do. You simply cannot allow him to continue to go out there in the middle of a playoff chase and not be competitive one out of every five games. You cannot have an arm tied behind your back for 20% of your games. That's not an option for the 2018 Mariners, who are struggling and desperately fighting to try to make this playoffs, and 24 guys pulling in one direction and one guy who's not. You just can't do it.
And a Friday night that was really hard. A Friday night that that had, I think, all of us frustrated. A Thursday off day, go on the road. It's the Angels. The Astros have lost. The A's are losing. Chance to pick up a game down in Anaheim, gave yourself multiple opportunities, just couldn't get it done.
I said it was the worst loss of the season.
And I was sweating mad. I mean, I literally was sweating anger, which is not a good place to be at 1:30 in the morning in Atlanta with an early wake-up call the next day. But that's neither here nor there. But it was so frustrating. They think, okay, Felix, let's go. Let's go. You're just waiting on him to make that turn. You're just waiting on him to put that eight-inning, you know, one-run game together to be counted on because, you know, he did it for so long. He was your guy for a decade that was the stopper. He was the game changer, but he's just not that anymore. And unfortunately, Saturday's outing gets shelled. The Mariners do get one yesterday, but Felix, maybe Mike for the first time as well in cut three. Yeah, he shared some of his vulnerability as well.
I don't have a lot of stuff to say, so... We said it's the worst performance. I mean, it's embarrassing. I mean, if you would have made the playoffs, I have to do something better than this. So that's all I got to say.
Felix. That was not a take the first inning out and I'm Justin Verlander. That was not a, hey, I got good stuff. It was just unlucky. That was not a, hey, man, that's just baseball. I can't really explain it. It's just unlucky. It wasn't any of that. It wasn't a disparity, you know, between him and his manager. Right, there was none of that. That was pretty much open wound right there that Felix just doesn't have answers.
By some of the numbers, he is 8-9, but with an ERA of 5.58, a whip, walks and hits per innings pitch. You want that number to be around, I mean, look, a good pitcher is close to 1, 1.1, somewhere in that range, 1.2, okay. His is 1.407, which is dreadful. His WAR, if you choose to use that stat, is negative 0.9. He is worth right now nearly negative a win, which is beyond... I mean, that's a AAA player at best. This is not a guy you can keep in your rotation while you're trying to do what you're trying to do. And so, you know, look, I know there are some arguments against it. I know there'll be people who say, it's Felix Hernandez. He deserves the respect of being allowed to work it out. But I would argue he's had that. That's what we've had up until now. I mean, if Casey Lawrence had been in this rotation or Christian Bergman or whoever and had put up the same numbers and had the same blind-numbered starts that Felix has had, he'd have been out of this rotation ages ago. And not just this year. He would have been out of this rotation probably a year ago and maybe even the year before that. So he's already gotten the extra respect. He was given the opening day start. There's a million different ways they have allowed Felix to work this out himself. And by the way, I agree with a lot of those moves. But at this point, I'm sorry, no other player gets to pitch the way he has and take every single turn, and it's just time. And it's become unfair, as I said, to the fans. It's unfair to the rest of the organization, but most importantly, it's to his teammates. And it's those teammates that I think are owed something from Scott Service here, and that is to remove Felix from the rotation. And if Felix was the hardest worker on the team, if Felix was the guy who was their leader, you might, you know, that's why Kyle Seager gets a chance to go out there every day. A, the defense has still been good, and B, he works his butt off, and so everybody's willing to have a little bit of allotment for Kyle Seager or a bunch of other guys. That's not who Felix is. No one has ever given me any indication that Felix either knows what to do to get out of this or has tried everything and worked his butt off to get out of this. And so if I'm Scott Service, I'm thinking real hard about it. Sounds like he is. Cut two.
You know, we got to wait and see. I mean, you know, we've put ourselves in a position that we're you know, coming down the stretch here. We got a chance to fight for a playoff spot. And every time out there, you need to be competitive. You need to give your chance to win. And, you know, we just haven't had that out of Felix here the last couple times out.
That sounds pretty clear.
Yeah, no sport reveres their players. Timmy Kirchner was on before Lydia early this morning talking about just the history and in the background and the Hall of Fame speeches yesterday, which were awesome. And to hear the Chipper Jones talk about Mickey Mantles and just the reverence for the past. And baseball does. You know, we talk about it a lot in this community.
Because of the stats is a big part of it and because of the nostalgia around it.
That's exactly right. And because they're in your living room every single day. And when they go on amazing runs like the Mariners did in the mid-90s or the early 2000s, those memories kind of stick with you, and there's just tremendous reverence for what's done in the past. That's where, you know, I think if Chuck Armstrong and Howard Lincoln and the similar regime was in place and all the folks that, you know, had been here for decades, Mike, maybe this is a different story. It's not. Jerry and Scott are in charge of this thing now. Okay, Stanton and Mather in charge of this thing with DePoto now. And now you've got a playoff, you know, a playoff push here over the next 50-some games that, unfortunately, Felix, I think, has made this decision for them.
I'm sorry, I'm bleeding over.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah,
over there?
I don't know.
What was that?
I went camping this weekend.
I mean, I'm trying to like keep great focus.
I got bug bites.
Am I going to get a big Band-Aid? Is that the next thing that's coming?
If there was a Band-Aid, I would put one on my elbow.
If there's a big Band-Aid coming, you're putting your sweatshirt back on.
But these are new pants. I don't want blood all over them.
That's what I'm saying. Put your sweatshirt back on. I can't have you bleeding all over me, too.
I don't want to bleed into my sweatshirt.
Oh, my gosh. What is that? A spider bite?
I don't know.
Arachnophobia come get you?
I went camping. You saw the picture of that bug that was on my tent.
Yes, you're bleeding.
I know. It's disgusting. Is it, how bad is the bleeding?
I mean, not terrible.
Thank God.
Yeah, that's such a distraction.
I'm going camping again, man. I'm going to go head out there. I'm going to grow a beard. I'm going to live out in the wilderness.
So what do you do? So ultimately, you know, does this further enhance another trade for a starter? Is this Erasmo?
Let me
go. Is now Erasmo going to come in and save the day as the fifth starter on this team?
Well, but he can be a fifth starter. Look, Erasmo doesn't need to be your ace. He needs to come in here and be better than Felix's 5.5 ERA. Do you think he can do that? Do you think Erasmo can give you a reasonable shot to win every five games? Yes, I do. I don't think he's great. I mean, you know, I'm not banking on Erasmo, and I still think I'd like to see them go out and find another starting pitcher. And, yeah, maybe Matt Harvey is interesting or some of these other names. But Erasmo can at least give you five innings and two runs. He can give you 6-3. He can have a quality start now and again. Felix right now is incapable of that.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think you have to replace him in the rotation as soon as Erasmo's ready. Erasmo's supposed to pitch, I believe, today. So they're off a little bit in terms of the day of the week they would go. But, yeah, if Erasmo is ready, if and when, I think you've got to put him into the rotation. That's one. Two, you continue to amp up your quest to find a starting pitcher. And three, you got to make...
What are we, a day away?
And what are you going to do, bury him as the long reliever and you can kind of move Elias out of there for now?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess that's what you have to do. It's embarrassing, but I don't know what else you can do for Felix unless his back is acting up on him again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean...
Got a little tightness there in the...
Brock, to answer your question, we're one day, 5 hours, 50 minutes, and 54 seconds.
Say that again?
We're one day, 5 hours, 50 minutes, and 50
thank
seconds.
You. From the trade deadline, from the greatest day in all of sports.
I know.
A day that we have been out here for many of those, and we'll be out here again tomorrow, right, when Jared Washburn was traded and
all the
big fury that created in trying to figure out, are they in, are they out? Can they both be buyers and sellers? Can the Mariners make a move? Can the Mariners get a center field back? Can the Mariners add another reliever outside of Tui? Can the Mariners do something with their starters now that Felix is out? All of this awesome energy created by a baseball team that is still 19 games over 500. That was still, in some ways, the class of the American League West this weekend, as both the A's and the Astros get swept.
How did that happen? If you had to take a bet on the A's and Astros both getting swept this weekend, what would you have bet?
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
There's not a cent I would have put down, no matter what odds you would have given me, that could happen.
Do you want me to suck that venom out? Venom that's coming?
It might be from a snake or something.
All right, come on.
7:10, time for Need to Know.
Suck that venom out.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Hey, good news for Dwayne Brown and the Seattle Seahawks as the big left tackle reaches an agreement on a three-year extension, could be worth up to $36.5 million. Regardless, it keeps him in Seattle for what will likely be the remainder of his NFL career. At least that's what he believes, according to his tweet. This is good news, man. They have not been able to lock down that position. If you can't lock down that, how can you lock down the rest of an offensive line that they are counting on to as Dave Wyman likes to say, help Russell Wilson. They need to help Russell. That starts by protecting his blind side with a big door named Dwayne Brown. Hopefully they can then start to work out each of the other positions and solidify them down the line until they have a running game back and some protection for one of the great quarterbacks in the
game. We had talked about this. We've been clamoring for this really since minicamp when he was out here and OTAs and everything else, and money had to come off the books and decisions had to be made with Malik McDowell and Cam Chancellor, some of those formalities. Cliff Averill's money had to come off the books, and ultimately there was enough cash there in place to get this deal done. I think it's great news on a couple different levels. It took both sides wanting to make this happen. Dwayne Brown held out. He didn't Earl Thomas down in Houston last year. He was done. He wanted his new deal. He wanted out of McNair's organization in Houston. He came here, and even though he couldn't contribute the way he wanted to with a high ankle sprain last season, he wanted to be a part of this. And it took both sides wanting that deal to get done to get it done. Number two, I think money-wise, financially, you look at the numbers with Matthews and Luan over the weekend, $15, $16 million. I think this is some value and a favorable deal for both sides. And then lastly, I think it shows a commitment to that quarterback, to Russell Wilson for the years ahead, that yes, we understand the mess that this line has been. We'll give you at least one cornerstone for the next 3 to 4 years as we begin your contract negotiation next offseason.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Mariners managed to take one of three from the Angels over the weekend. Brutal loss on Friday, one of the worst of the year. And yeah, I'll call out D. Gordon, who's been awesome for them, especially off the field this year. I think his arrogance and belief in his own speed, and I don't mean he's an arrogant guy, but he's got an athletic arrogance, which you like to talk about, Brock, and generally that's a good thing. On Friday, I think he got the better of him. That was not a smart decision with one out to try to score from third on the double steal, and unfortunately may have cost his team the game. Right after that, you knew that Cole Calhoun was going to put one in the seats, and that's exactly what he did in the first pitch of the 10th inning. But they do manage to steal one yesterday thanks to a 7-run first inning, an 8-run explosion, and then hanging on white-knuckle style for the win. In the midst of it all, Felix Hernandez giving up 7 runs in just 2 2/3, not what you needed, and quite frankly, probably the end to Felix Hernandez in this rotation for now. I don't know how you can run him out there 5 days after that. I just don't see Scott Servais doing it.
Yeah, that double steal felt like somewhat of an act of desperation. You know, it's been that kind of month of July, sitting now at 9-12 overall in the month. You do get one down in Anaheim, albeit with 7 runs in the first inning, and once again, almost no add-on and absolutely nothing really after that, with an offense that is absolutely stalled this month of July, and especially right in the middle. But yeah, the story of the weekend is Felix Hernandez. You know, we have been wondering. We had a worry meter, remember, before the year? With every single one of his starts, where are we going to be on this worry meter? It's no longer a worry meter. It is a salvage meter, and more than likely it's going to be salvaged, not in this rotation anytime soon.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Trade deadline still a day away, but the Mariners have already made a move. They acquire more bullpen help in the form of righty from St. Louis, Sam Tuivasa. He's got a 3.69 ERA. He's holding righties to a 5.31 OPS. Look, this is a guy that's going to help them. He's got, 5 years left of club control. There's probably going to be a part of this bullpen for quite some time to come. Is he the leverage righty they need right now? Probably not. I don't see him taking on that eighth-inning role and getting out big-time right-handers when you need him to, but doesn't mean he can't play a valuable role here, and he's a good arm, and I'm glad to see the Mariners continue to make moves. They did give up something. I mean, the kid they gave up was their fourth-round pick last year. So, you know, as the trade deadline gets closer and closer, it's going to be up to them to find and a way to use their cash instead of their prospects to bring back something.
No, I think Mr. Colomé is your eighth inning leverage guy. And in fact, he's had a nice month of July, and Edwin Diaz gets his 39th save yesterday. No, this is more for your Nick Vincent. I think you're Juan Nicasio for where he's going to slide in, where he's going to fit into, you know, that situation with David Phelps' injury. You just have not really solidified that spot. You know, Nicasio and Vincent have just not been sharp all season long, nor consistent. So, yeah, former high round draft pick from St. Louis. I think we've been down that road before, right? Let's take this the Marco Gonzalez route. Relationship wise, the Mariners have relationship there. They have him in Tampa. I hope this is not it, though. I hope and one day in 5 hours from now, we're not talking with a trade deadline that's come and passed and looking at waiver claims. This team needs to continue to add.
All right, there's three things, excuse me, you need to know every day at 7:10. You know, you called it desperation. I think that went over the line on Friday. I mean, I get that you're trying to put the game in motion to try to win it. You've got one out, and at that point, men on second and third. With Mitch Haniger and Nelson Cruz up, all you need is a fly ball to put your team ahead and bring in Edwin Diaz? I'm sorry, man.
Well, first and third, right?
No, well, he's stealing on the play. It's going to be second and third. Yep. That's not called a double steal.
Yep.
Segura takes off. He's going to be safe at second base.
Yeah, but D's judgment, I mean, this is a conversation for later in the day. D's judgment on sack flies, D's judgment on rounding, you know, scoring from first, D's judgment
know,
on his speed
else,
and his
trust.
There's
no need there. Yep. It's a risk that your team didn't need to take, and I unfortunately, it came
back
to bite.
I think Haniger, Cruz, and Seager's numbers in the month of July.
But they don't need a hit. They need to hit a fly ball,
well,
for God's sake.
Even those numbers tell you.
Let's talk to the professor.
Not been real good.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, Dwayne Brown gets his deal here in Seattle. How did this get done? What does it mean?
Well, what it means, and you kind of figured it was going to be a little bit of an upgrade from the Andrew Whitworth contract of a year ago at about $11.5 million, and so he gets, you know, $12 million plus a year. And what it means is that you know, it'll free up some cap room. It takes care of him, and I think it's going to lead to other signings too, because I think there's probably going to be good progress on Frank Clark, maybe Tyler Lockett, and trying to see if they can get as many deals done. But I think, you know, you get deals done when you can get them, and this is the first one. I thought he was going to be the last because, you know, you needed to find out how much it was going to eat up cap room with all the other guys. But hey, you get one, you get it, and it's done.
Was this an extension off of this year? So there's three more after this year? Or did they kind of rip the deal up, and do you kind of have a sense for what the guarantees will look like in this?
It'll be three more after this year, so that takes him, what, till 221 or so.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine it's not going to be, you know, just to be the first year guaranteed. I don't know what the signing bonus is or anything else. My guess is they'll put enough in to make sure that the cap number, it gets so much lower than what it was.
Biggest story headline that you read over a busy NFL training camp weekend, lots of injuries, Tom Brady melts down a little bit. What were a couple of the biggest headlines that you saw and read?
Well, I mean, certainly the loss of Jason Verrett over in the Chargers, because now they're just snake bit. I mean, they're down three key players because they lost their best tight end, Hunter Henry. He's out for the season with an ACL, but that was huge, the Achilles injury. I think that you can see that the holdouts are getting kind of nasty right now in Chicago with Raquan Smith and certainly the Sam Darnold one. And again, it's over language. That's the thing, offset language. And also, if there's a suspension, that you'd lose all the guarantees, and it's not getting good reviews by the fans and not getting good reviews by the organization that Darnold's holding out in New York. I think that's been a big headline. I think you can look at some of the the fact that Baltimore right now is getting good play out of Joe Flacco. That's encouraging. Thought that seemed to be good. I thought it was interesting that Ndamukong Suh went to the team and said, hey, I think Aaron Donald should be paid more than I was when I got my $19 million a year deal in Miami. So, you know, lots of negotiation, lots of football. Yesterday, for the most part, was the first real big day league-wide of padded practices.
And good to see the Seahawks kind of get involved with that. What have you seen out here? I mean, who stood out? What are some names that are starting to pop a little bit here?
Yeah, Chris Carson continues to be one of the stars of camp. I think you can see that David Moore had a real good day yesterday and is having a real good camp. Really impressed with the play that came out of the safety position. Tedrick Thompson coming all the way across the field and getting an interception with good range off of Russell Wilson. Thought that looked good. Rasheem Green actually had one of the first good days that I saw. He showed good Christmas. I really like the way the offensive line's blocking. You see the one-on-one drills. They're more anchoring down. They're more technique-oriented, I think. That looks encouraging, so that looks good. And I think the overall impression is just team speed. There's a lot of team speed on this team.
Yeah, youthful exuberance will lead to some of that. You've got an advantage in some ways over a lot of us, Clayton. You got that database that you're plugging and playing all the time, so you're looking at a lot of these names. But when it comes to the roster and the 90 guys actually practicing, do you find yourself looking at your roster with these names and with these numbers still an awful lot, trying to figure out who so many of these new pieces are in Seattle?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, both here and league-wide, I'm always trying to study it as best I can to get a good grasp. I know yesterday after coming back from practice, I was going through all 32 teams' depth charts to kind of look and see, okay, who's starting and who's not, and who is projected to be starting, and then, of course, to refine that as injuries happen and everything else.
I asked you the other day, and I appreciate your hard work on this, to look into the Seahawks O-line, and now it's been added to. Right now, Dwayne's got even $36 million more dollars, and the commitment that this team has made with the first-rounder in Ifedi and the second-rounder in Posick and second-rounder in Britton, repaying him and Dwayne Brown, when you try to analyze that and look at their commitment to their offensive line compared to their peers in this league, has their commitment been as rich as just about anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, it took that one, and I know it took, unfair criticism when they tried to go a little bit too young, and they admitted it. I mean, they had just they wiped out too many veterans, and they had too many young guys. I mean, to a point where Justin Britt was in his first year at center, third year in the league, and he was the senior guy. And so they kind of fixed that up. But remember, they've drafted more offensive linemen than anybody else since Pete Carroll and John Snyder have got here. I mean, you can see that there was, when you're drafting young, I mean, there's not any type of way you can pay them until you get to the fourth and fifth years, and so that kind of put them in there. But no, I mean, they got three first round picks right now starting, two former second round picks starting. I mean, the one team that kind of tops them is San Francisco. They've got six first round picks and a second round pick. But no, I think there's a big commitment to the offensive line.
What happened to Sherm? He got torched. What, did you see that I video of him?
Yeah.
Whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, Marquise Goodwin.
I mean, is he okay? I hope so.
It was one of his
okay.
first practices, so probably, you can see that he's going to be rusty coming out the Achilles.
Yeah, a little bit. Rusty, like
don't
he got
you take
by
no
nine.
Sherm shots on Clayton, okay?
He got burned by like 9 yards.
Sherm announced Clayton at the Washington Sports Star of the Year. Don't you be taking any Sherm
not
shots.
Not taking a shot.
Clayton.
I just watched what happened, and he got burned by 9 yards.
It's the first practice,
all
first
right.
padded practice.
Good. Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton,
yes.
If I forced you to get a tattoo, what location would you put it on your body?
I probably would put it on my rear so I would never have to see it because I would never have a tattoo. So it has to be in some place that nobody's going to see. And so unless I would have to moon you or something like that, nobody else would see it.
Yeah, follow-up wild card. Under what circumstances would you have to moon somebody?
What's that?
Under which circumstances would you have to moon somebody?
Maybe a fan fiction Friday.
That's about it. John, I'm with you. Finally, we found something you and I agree on 100%.
Right
somewhere no one sees it,
right,
not even
right,
on
exactly.
the buttocks.
Exactly. All right, have a good day, John. We'll talk to you later. John will be down here at 10 o'clock for his show. You can hear him again with Danny David Moore at 4 o'clock every single day here on 710 ESPN.
I mean, that's kind of the obvious. There's part of me that would like ankle, like just kind of feel that pain.
Yeah, people see that.
Huh? Yeah, he puts socks on. He can largely hide that and disguise that, too.
No, not doing an ankle.
Hey, by the way, I didn't even hardly tell you guys. I got to watch the Falcons training camp Saturday. Yeah, I've got some cool little takeaways in Blue 42, at least with that. But it was neat for my eyes as I'm out here watching Seahawks. You got some of their injured players out here doing some things. To see another organization.
Same music?
Lots of music.
Similar vibe?
Very, very similar vibe.
Yeah.
I am going to tell the Seahawks one thing. I'm going to give them one little thing I learned from Atlanta that I think they could do here pretty well.
Really?
Yeah, maybe.
When
yeah.
do we get to hear that?
Oh, that's a pretty good. That's what they call a tease in the business.
Well, usually with a tease, we yes. we tell people when
is
we're
going to
be paying it off. When will we be paying off said tease?
Next.
Next?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Yeah, no need for the Lennox air conditioning this weekend, Brock. I was out under the stars. Like a mountain man, camping.
Play me some mountain music.
I'm going to talk to you about Dwayne Brown here.
Where grandma and grandpa used to play. And I'll roll on down the river to my Cajun hideaway. Is that what you're listening to in your hammock?
Zero. No,
oh, really? No Alabama?
Not. No.
Really?
Not.
No George? No Garth? No anybody, huh?
No. I mean, okay. I went camping. I didn't become a, like...
Country boy?
No.
Country boy can't survive? No Hank?
He'll listen to some, like, Coulter Wall still. He can do that.
We didn't listen to any music, to be honest with you. I didn't want to interrupt other people and be rude at the campsite. That seems like kind of a jerk move. Maybe that's the way you treat your other campers. As part of the camping community, Brock, yes. Now, I would never...
Okay.
As part of the camping community, I would absolutely not want to disturb the other poor people. It's bad enough they got, you know, six kids under the age of nine screaming at the top of their lungs throughout the day. This camping thing is bizarre. Everything I hated about it as a kid is gone. It's a big sham. Did I send you the picture of the pillow top mattress we were sleeping on? My wife bought a mattress, a blow-up air mattress, that was no joke thicker than the bed we have at home. We slept in one. The kids slept in another one that was shorter.
Right.
And we're sleeping
so
in a bed.
So you were not
in
the four-person.
My friends brought us a tent. Thank you to Rob and Katie.
You were not in the four-person
tent. They brought us an eight-person
tent.
There you
go. Yes.
The eight-person tent is essentially a small studio apartment.
Yes.
It's gigantic.
It's as big as our studio.
It had its own kitchen, bathroom. It had a couch built into one of the walls. No, it's just a tent. But it's huge. We had plenty of room. It didn't rain. The top is open. But all the things I hated as a kid are gone.
Yep.
Nobody sleeps on the ground anymore. You sleep in an air mattress. That was great. You park there, which I've never been to a place where you camp and park right by there. So you can
you've never
everything.
Been actual like state park parking.
No.
Only been to, like,
when I was a kid, we would hike into some
unpack your stuff.
Godforsaken place in Maine.
No.
It was awful. The bugs were gigantic. Yep. You'd get eaten alive. It would generally rain. It would be humid. It was terrible. It was awful. There was nothing pretty to see. You'd just be in some forest. This was beautiful. It was great.
That's awesome.
It was fantastic.
Food was good.
Food was really good. The food was terrible when we were kids.
Sure.
Because you'd have to carry it.
That's great. You just had a 10.
Night
just
and
a
day.
10.
Night and day. Yeah, we went out Highway 20. We did not make it to Twisp, as you suggested. That was another 70 miles
sure.
away. But just before you get to Lake Diablo, which is beautiful, by the way, right on the Skagit River. Awesome. Great time. And thank you very much to everybody who offered advice.
Good.
We did not really even have too much stuff.
You thought a day was about right, 30 hours or so?
Yeah, it was about good.
What did Howdy do? 80 hours? Yeah. 90 hours?
Howdy, I think, got to cut off his own arm in order to
yeah, I went up Wednesday, came back Saturday. I guess we went up Thursday.
Wow.
It was nice to live out in the woods, get some space, actually, finally. It was
great. That's great, Howdy.
Good for you.
That's awesome.
So while I was out there missing a lot of the news, Dwayne Brown, because I tried to unplug as much as possible, we had reception. I mean, there's another thing. Like, camping in 2018, it's like, oh, well, what's going on? I don't know. I'll just check my phone. Oh, did you remember to bring the lantern? No, but I got my phone on me. I just used the flashlight to get out
there. I'll call the tackle guy.
Right.
Bring it up to me.
This is really not that challenging.
Do you remember the food? I would just call an Uber.
Just Uber Eats, actually. They came down the Skagit River. It was amazing. They just throw the stuff out.
Come right in from Marble Mountain. They just drop it off. That's really not a big problem. So,
Some of
the news did come down. Dwayne Brown, and unlike John, I think we have speculated for a while that this would be the first domino to fall in terms of the Seahawks and the deals, and I'm glad this was the one they got done first. Tyler Lockett still scares, I think, a lot of people coming off the injury. I am very, very nervous about playing Frank Clark, and maybe they'll end up doing it, maybe not, but I would have a lot of reservation personally about
I'll raise my hand
him.
And second that opinion.
Dwayne Brown is a no-brainer. This is what they needed to do. He is an instant leader on this team. It's only a three-year deal added on, and as John said, really only one of them is going to be guaranteed. So it's not an insane contract. They're committing to protecting Russell Wilson. They empowered a legitimate new leader in this locker room. They maybe even sent a message to Earl that when you show up, good things can happen.
Yeah.
Isn't this all what we want from the Seahawks organization?
Yeah, I just can't imagine any downside. And even the Pro Football Focus folks that study the run grades and the pass blocking grades and everything else, this is a guy that's in the upper half of that that we didn't get to see the best of last year. And I love the fact that he still gutted it out and played. You know, he comes here, he misses all of camp in Houston, he plays the one game, he gets traded for, and then, of course, ding, a high ankle injury and unable to practice and unable to really, you know, I think make his presence felt the way that he would have wanted to kind of command that. And now when you get this kind of deal, you're empowered to do so. And Dwayne Brown talked about that, how much easier it was to be here this offseason, cut number 13, to really get his feet planted. And now he gets to bloom with an amazing new contract.
I'm extremely happy and grateful, very thankful to the organization, Paul Allen, John Schneider, Coach Carroll, everybody that worked, you know, to secure me here for a long time. I'm looking forward to finishing my career here. It's a great organization. Love the team, love the city, love the fans. And like I said, I'm just immensely grateful for this opportunity. I'm looking forward to getting to work.
And knows that it is easier. Cut 13 knows that it is easier when you actually are here practicing. You're working, you're setting the tone to have your voice grow.
Coming in the middle of the year, I knew maybe four guys on this team, you know, and no one really knows you. You know, they respect your game, but you don't know anybody. And going to battle with people every week, you know, you just try to gel, you know, as the year goes on. But being here throughout the offseason, people seeing me have, you know, my grind and my work ethic, I think they respect me a lot more, you know, and seeing my leadership through example and vocally, I think, you know, it's helped me be a part of the fabric of the locker room even more.
Brock, what's the most important part of the signing? Is it the protection in the passing game? Is it his ability to affect the running game? Is it sending a message about how they want to do business? Or is it empowering a leader?
Yeah, I think bottom line, it's the first one. He's got to be able to do that. You pay him and you give him $36 million after this season, and I'm sure a bunch of it guaranteed. You do that because he can actually do that job. And since Russell Okung has left here, you really, and even when Russell was here, unfortunately, some of his injury history, you just did not have that. Russell never had that. A situation where I just feel great about it. I can drop back here. I think he did with Russell early in 2012, 2013. I can drop back, and I just don't have to have my head on a swivel. Mm-hmm. That side is accounted for. It's that I don't have to sit there and worry. And if Fetty gets beat, now my head's not totally spinning around and running, you know, with the chicken, like, you know, with its head cut off, trying to find an avenue to go. So I think that trumps everything else. If he couldn't do his job, if they didn't think over the next 2 years, 3 years, that he could pass block at a high level and really protect that blind side, they would not have done this deal. They would not have done this deal. But they do. I'm glad they do. I think I saw enough evidence of it last season, and certainly this offseason, that he is so much better than a George Fant that's never played it, than a Riso Diambo that wasn't prepared for it, than a Bradley Sowell that couldn't play, than a lot of the, you know, what you've run out there, Gary Gilliam, the last 3 or 4 years at that spot. And so I think that to me is the most important.
What's the trickle-down effect?
The trickle-down effect is that he and Justin Britt run this show. That he and Justin Britt have the accountability in that room that you need up front. That the most important, I've said this and I'll believe it till the day I'm off this air, the most important position to empower the physical toughness of your football team is your O-line. That nobody else can do it. Your running back, Marshawn, was an outlier and awfully unique, that he set so much of the swagger and the intimidation. But the best football teams, the ones that are the most consistent year in and year out of being physically tough, have to start there on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. I think Britt's a tough dude. I think Postick's a tough dude. I think Dwayne Brown's an excellent football player and a tough dude. I think now you've got a bunch of them. My buddy that I stayed with down in Atlanta had trained DJ Fluker this offseason. He's like, that guy, you know, when motivated in shape, is just a mountain mover and one physical presence. So, you know, this is a different group than we've seen the last 2 or 3 years.
Any downside with his age?
Yeah, that would be the concern, that either the age or the injury history, you know, that you would just hate to see an ankle or a hamstring or a knee or something that just comes up on an older body. But the Andrew Whitworths of the world and the way they practice today, if you had to do it 10 years ago and go double days every day.
Yeah. Also, at that position, they seem to hold on longer at left tackle. And, you know, at some point, you got to go ahead and make a decision that you got to get somebody who can do this job. I wanted them to get Whitworth, and unfortunately, they didn't.
This one's a similar deal, probably similar
kind
of money.
It is, except you gave up a second and third round
pick
to do it instead of just signing the guy. I mean, honestly, if they had just done it and signed Whitworth a year ago, they could have avoided a lot of this stuff. If they had signed him, spent the extra money for him over Jokel, you could have avoided all of this, protected your left side, and just been done with this. But unfortunately, they don't do that. They still needed to get the left tackle, and hopefully Duane Brown will show over time that he's a better player than Whitworth is.
I need to pay off this tease. I said I learned something in
Atlanta. What'd you learn?
They got their berm active. They have a huge berm.
Okay.
So they had the music blaring and playing, but they would turn the music down, and someone operating constantly turn it down, and before the snap, they would have everybody on the berm, like they had people over there raising their hands to have actual crowd noise.
Interesting.
So when the team is doing team ones-on-ones and stuff over here, I'd like to see the berm, like maybe Blitz get out there and get the berm going before the snap to really create actual crowd noise.
Do you think the 12s are capable of
that? Oh, I think they're more than capable.
I don't know. I mean, they're not great football fans like they have in Atlanta.
Oh, you watch your mouth.
No, I'm making fun of Atlanta.
Yes.
All right, Coors Light's Blue 42 is coming up next. Richard Sherman did get dusted yesterday, and I want to know what it means. Brock, give me some answers next. I'm Brock and Saul.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for the Coors Light's Blue 42. It's three good football questions for Brock Heward every day. Especially fun. We're down here at Seahawks training camp. We'll have Jaron Reed join us coming up in a half hour at 8:15. A lot expected of him this year.
I kind of want cocky Jaron Reed.
I hope so.
I just kind of hope he has a little edge to him.
I hope he does that. I mean,
not
dance
like a,
that he's
like,
been
not
doing
a Mike
Jackson
Davis edge, kind of with C-Raj edge. But if it goes that way, that'd be fine too. Because I'm sure he's sick and tired of hearing about how everybody is left and no one is here. So I'm going to guess, I hope that there's a little edge to Jeremy.
All right, question number one. Speaking of guys that left, Richard Sherman left. Yesterday, some video emerged of him getting torched in a one-on-one drill by Marquise Goodwin, who's fast.
He's one of the five fastest receivers in the game.
He's almost 10 yards past Sherman when he catches the ball.
Yes.
What do you make of it?
Yeah, that I'm going to side with Clayton here a half hour ago. That's one of Sherman's first practices back. You're facing an elite track guy, a Marquise Goodwin, who could do one thing very well, and that's run a go route. And when Richard didn't get his hand on him on the line and he kind of got swayed to the left, he has no catch-up speed. That was not going to happen with that guy. And he did see a little hitch. Right? I mean, Richard passed his physical. He's not on their pup. That got him a $2 million bonus. That guy is so driven and hard-headed. You knew that was going to happen. He was not going to miss a $2 million payout for not passing his physical. But that being said, he also has a little hitch in the giddy-up that's got to get back and get to 100%. And was nowhere near that as he was trying to chase down Mr. Goodwin.
All right, question number two. Duane Brown got his deal done over the weekend. 3-year extension added on to the year remaining on his deal. Who's next?
I think they're talking to, I'm comfortable, yeah, I think they're talking to Tyler and to Justin Coleman. Tyler Lockett, Justin Coleman, wide receiver, nickelback. Two positions there that don't have a lot of proven depth on this roster. I think this team has seen that you need a nickel in this league. That is a priority position. It used to be, well, you know, you can pencil it in, you got to have your base defense. Not anymore, man. You've got to have that nickelback. And there's a lot of guys that are now just specializing in that position, and you'd really put Coleman there. He's not an outside corner, but he's a nickelback that can blitz. He can play the run. He can cover some of the good slot guys in this league and is growing in his feel and comfort. If those are team favorable deals, right? If Justin Coleman and Tyler Lockett want to say, hey, I'm not gonna just totally go crazy and bet on the market next year for me. I'm going to take some security now and take a few million bucks now and some guarantees now to set myself up in their team-friendly deals. I would love to see those get done because, like you, I have some real hesitancy when it comes to Frank Clark. I would like to see him play this deal out, have a monster year, and force us into a big financial commitment after it. I can't make that commitment right now.
All right, question number three. So, by the way, no Frank Clark on that list for you.
I just said, yeah, he would be one I have to see play it out.
I'm with you.
I just said that.
I know.
Okay. I was just wondering.
I know. I'm just adding.
Can you stop bleeding?
I think so.
Okay.
I ain't got time to bleed. Let's see. Brian Schottenheimer spoke yesterday and singled out a few people in his press conference that he was impressed with. Who was on the list?
Not surprised CJ Procise was on that list. CJ Procise is a monster before the pads come on and when he's healthy and available. And that's not a shot at CJ. That's just the track record of the last couple years. But Mr. Schottenheimer is noticing. He was running with the ones in the two-minute drill. The versatility of CJ is pretty unique.
Obviously, CJ was a guy that everybody's talked a lot about these last three practices. The first two, for sure, got to watch the film today, but the first two practices, outstanding. Obviously, everybody knows how versatile he is. He's on top of his assignments mentally. So off to a great start this training camp. In the spring, I didn't really feel him as much as maybe some of the other guys, but off to a great start. Talked to him about that even today, just in kind of the stretch line. He's off to a great start, and we all know his ability level and what he can do for
you. It's a pretty good-looking running back room, man, really. I mean, Mike Davis did get a little frustrated with our station because he's not mentioned with CJ and Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, and even McKissick was the only guy on your team that had a rushing touchdown outside of Russell Wilson last year. And that's a group five deep that you could stack up, at least from a pure talent. Certainly not a track record and not done it with big boy pads in this league, but from just a physical presence and what you know, Shoddy just said, of feeling him, feeling the talent and speed and presence of these running backs, that's off to a good start here in camp.
As today's Coors Light's Blue 42, football's funny with some of its phrases. We talk about free and easy and some of the things you hear in baseball, but football, you got to flash,
yep,
and then you got to feel somebody.
You got to feel it, man. You can just feel his presence. You know what I felt on the sidelines there at the Atlanta training camp the other day? Julio Jones is as big as Frank Clark.
Yeah.
Like, when you
it's
see
crazy,
Julio,
right?
It is. And then he runs like a gazelle. I mean, it was superhuman. You see why they pay him what they did, and they kind of caved to him. Like, as far as human beings go in this game of just size, strength, speed, how many Julio Jones there are? There are none. I mean, there's not another Hopkins. We looked at his size the other day. A.J. Green, and since he's a big receiver, but nowhere near. Like, just the physical presence of that guy, Mohamed Sanu, Calvin Ridley. Oh, my goodness.
How'd Ridley look?
The two running backs. He was a little banged up. He was not running and going full speed. Sark was out there running practice, which is kind of weird to see.
Yeah.
It is so funny at these training camps.
Who do you think would be his pick for the third wide receiver?
That's a good spot. Thanks. Yeah, that's a good call. You see all these like world-class athletes, and even out here, right? You see all these DBs, receivers, running backs. Just like, just blow your mind. And then all of a sudden, like, it was so hard. I'm staring at Julio. And then the old linemen come running by, and you're like, how is this even the same game?
I was saying,
how is this even the same? How do they play the same game of football?
I was looking at Puna Ford, who's here for the Seahawks.
Yes.
A little nose tackle. He's like 5'6" and huge, 320 pounds, with arms that are like Kyle Brown's.
Yes,
and he plays somehow the same game as
Ndamukong Suh.
I was looking at Demore Stringfellow, who's tall, or Brandon Marshall. These guys are 6'5".
Yes.
Tall. Like, how do they both play NFL football?
By the way, Brandon Marshall, Julio, that would be actually a decent comp, but Julio's even bigger.
Right.
Like, when you see Brandon Marshall out here, you notice how ginormous he is?
Huge.
And then Julio can really run.
I hope Brandon Marshall can figure it out. It'd be kind of fun to see him. I don't know what he did over the weekend, but it'd be really nice if he could, like, be Brandon Marshall, make this team, be a red zone presence for them, and kind of be that tall possession receiver that they could really use, a complement to some of the shorter, faster guys that they have out there already. All right, that's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. It's a little football talk every single morning at 7:45. You know it's coming. We know Jaron Reed is going to be with us at 8:15, so that's coming up here in about 20 minutes. We'll talk some more about Felix. We'll get you guys on the horn, get some of your reaction to what you think the Mariners should do now that Felix sure seems to have pitched his way out of that rotation. What do you do? How do you handle it? What do you do if you're Scott Servais? Some interesting conversation still to come right after a buzz through the NFL. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.